You're listening to the OneOfUs.net Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to a new episode of Geeks at Large. I'm joined by Casey.
No, you're not.
You're right. It's just me talking to myself. My name's Taylor.
You're just doing funny voices, and I'm really impressed that you can actually make your voice talk over another voice.
Well, thanks, me. That was great. See?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And might I add how great your hair looks today.
Thanks, me.
I guess I have to admit that I'm a part of this now or something.
Yeah, you're back now. Because you haven't been... When was the last time you were even on a podcast?
Well, I did do one from prison in summer, but... Legally, I'm not allowed to discuss it until the statute of limitations expires in 2049.
But seriously, when was the last time you were on? Because I don't remember.
I think it was the Captain America Civil War one.
Oh, yeah, that might have been.
Yeah, the one where I was the one guy who thought that Civil War had some problems, but still was a great movie.
Yeah, by the way, fuck you about that, Casey.
Oh, no!
Oh, no!
I should have known that would happen.
Guess I got what I deserve.
That explains why I keep getting gunned down.
Keep getting that hate mail from that ocean of Geeks at Large fans.
I don't know. People just scowl at me when they see me on the street.
They never even listen to the podcast and they scowl at you.
Yeah, they just say, God.
That must be because you've had a change of location, correct?
Yeah, I moved.
To where?
Well, I got a new apartment. First I was on the first floor, and now I'm on the third floor.
God damn it, Casey, what city are you in now?
We're really asking five questions there.
Yeah, you know, it's Tulsa.
Tesla.
The five boroughs of Oklahoma City.
Oh, great. I was going to lead into it. Taylor, that was going to be the end of this. I was just going to offhand mention, oh, I'm in New York now.
Well, there you just did it.
Yeah, but you said five boroughs. You gave it away.
Well,
you
know there's what a lot city... of cities in with five boroughs in the United States.
Name another city with a borough.
Omaha.
Omaha is a burrow. People burrow underground there to avoid the harsh sunlight.
I can make a Pensatucky joke.
So I live in New York now, yeah.
Casey's in New York.
I'm a New Yorker.
So what brought you to New York, Casey?
Yeah, the heroin business really wasn't taking off in Savannah.
So I wanted to get closer to Maine.
Yeah. You know, you start here, it's just really a couple hours by train. But any more than I'm gonna reveal stuff that the DA has advised me not to reveal.
Hey, man, I mean, the governor of Maine already said that there's plenty of heroin dealers coming from New York City, so... Because he was talking about you.
Yeah. Yeah, I know Jimmy. He's a... Not gonna lie. He has a mojo. I have a mojo, and our mojos just don't mesh, man.
Whoa, take it easy, Mr. Rebel.
Yeah, I'm just gonna need to go in there and become governor myself.
We're gonna have a coup d'etat in Maine.
I'm gonna become governor the only way I know how. Revolution. Guns ablazing.
You say you want a revolution.
Well, you know, we all want a ginger gov. Ginger gov, oh no. Ginger
well, you gov. Mentioned you're going to run for office in Wyoming.
Yeah, oh, no, I don't think the listeners know about that.
Oh, okay. Fill them in on that.
Oh, you want me to... So, long-time listeners might know that my name is spelled stupidly.
If you've ever read the description of a Geeks at Large episode where Casey's in it, you can see how Casey's name is spelled.
Yeah, and you'll see, and your first response will be, "How the fuck? Who the fuck would name a kid that?" The answer is my parents, and the reason my parents, and the reason my parents named me that way is because I am the, my family, 100 or 150 or 200 or 6,000 years ago, founded a town in Wyoming called Casey. It's bumfuck nowhere. The only thing you can say about it is that there's 293 people there. Their own website refers to it as this. We are 45 miles north of Casper, Wyoming. To which you'll say, where the fuck's Casper, Wyoming?
Where the fuck's Wyoming?
And they're 45 miles south of Buffalo, Wyoming. To which you'll say, isn't Buffalo, New York?
And then to which you say, yes, that was a test.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's a nowhere town, and for life of me, I'm thinking, you know, with my name recognition there and the fact that my family founded it, that town's my birthright. I should run for mayor of that town.
I will take it legally or by force.
No. I'm just like, Casey for Casey would look great on a bumper sticker.
I want to make a hope-like poster of your face. Because I asked you once, like, what would be your four-letter slogan? And I think you gave me, like, an acronym.
How about, you know, I think it would either be Ginge or Birthright.
That's four letters.
Or Mine.
Oh my god, this episode is
Taylor.
Yeah.
If I ever decide to do this, we're deleting this episode.
No. I can't let you do that.
No, we are. People can't know this happened. Because this is going to sound bad to the voters. Wait, what am I saying? There's nobody with high speed internet in Wyoming.
There's like 17 people in Wyoming anyway.
Yeah, and if I go there, I could rule over all of them. my first act will be to make them build a giant pit.
and then the next act will be you must fall into the pit.
No. The pit's there to trap tourists who drive through.
Oh.
It's like a Wile E. Coyote trap. We're going to put a tarp over it that looks like it's a road, and then they're going to drive into it and get crushed. And when we have enough people in there, the people in the pit will fight to death.
They'll just be like, oh, shit, we can't go to the Wyoming part of Yellowstone. We'll just have to go to the other parts of Yellowstone.
We're trapped.
Oh no, we're trapped in Wyoming. This is worse than being trapped in hell or on the moon.
I always knew I would die in Wyoming.
It's my birthright.
It was foretold to me in an ancient prophecy that every member of my family dies in Wyoming.
Okay, so what brings you to New York City?
I like the city.
But was there, like, any job opportunities or anything like that that you wanted to pursue?
Well, like, people know that I want to scout. People know that I want to be a writer. People know that New York City is good for that. And I like New York. I like being able to look to my right, see Jersey City, and just spit, hoping that the wind hit the guy in the face.
It'd be like, fuck you, Jersey City.
That's a city that's entire purpose is to be near another city.
Casey just really wants to be in girls season, whatever the fuck season they're on.
Four.
Thank you. For someone who doesn't watch girls.
My mom's a big fan of it.
Oh, okay.
And my mom, it was a thing like the last year I was still at home where she was trying to, get us to, my dad and I, to watch the show. And she was like, I just don't understand why you guys can't get into it. I was like, Mom, this show is objectively good. So, to anybody out there who says a girl sucks, no, you're objectively wrong. It's objectively a fine show. And it's an auteur show where somebody is getting across the exact thing they want to do, the show they want to make. And it resonates with a whole lot of people. And I cannot fault that. it doesn't resonate with me, and I don't like watching it.
Yeah.
It's a great show. I do not enjoy in the slightest. It's like Boyhood.
Yes. You should do for your mom's birthday. For your mom's birthday, you should just cameo in Girls. And not tell her and be like, hey, did you watch the latest episode of Girls?
No, I was talking with my roommate recently, and he mentioned that I could probably get a job as a background extra.
Well, there you go. That should be your career from now on. You should be like that one guy that's in The Social Network that we always joked looked like me. Like, hey, there I am. And he's like in everything.
I never made the connection that it looks like you, actually.
Kind of. He kind of looks like me.
Kind of. Maybe if you were more of a schmuck.
Probably.
That fuckhard.
He's like alternate universe me. He's a little more flubby. He is the
you to Domhnall Gleeson's me.
That is a fair analogy, Casey.
And that is the exact type of fair analogies I'll bring to the voters of Casey, Wyoming.
I'm Casey Girard, and I approve this message.
I'm Casey Girard, and I approve this Iron Fist.
Whoa, the new Iron Fist show? That's coming out in March.
Oh, my God. I know nothing about Iron Fist, so.
Yeah. It's like I told you on Twitter, or not on Twitter, on Facebook, I was like, I'm kind of dreading it coming out, because not necessarily because of the quality of the show itself, but just because of the whole political, like, baggage that it brings with it. Because, well, you know, there was all the controversy of the casting.
Well, I genuinely know nothing about what's going on with it.
Well, basically, Iron Fist is a character. He's a white dude who learns, you know, martial arts.
All right.
From, you know, mystical Asian masters in, you know.
So Mr. Miyagi teaches him martial arts.
Well, and it's just that it's a lot of, there's this whole, it's the whole trope of, like, you know, white dude goes to the West and becomes the savior kind of thing. It's a concept that's aged poorly. Let's just say that.
I think it's going to depend on how they handle the supporting characters and the Asian characters.
Well, there's that too, but it's not unlike the whole thing with Doctor Strange and Tilda Swinton's character.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like that, but now it's the main character, and it's a TV show. And, you know, now that representation is a much more talked about thing, and, you know, it's the importance of it is now actually talked about much more. And I was in the camp where it's like, you could have made him Asian, you know, and tied that into it.
Maybe they should have thrown everybody through a loop and made him black.
Silly, we could only have one black superhero, and we got that. It's Luke Cage, okay? God. No. They should have thrown everyone for a loop and made Iron Fist Asian and all of his martial art masters white. just be so awful. Like, just garbage. But
how about everybody's Jewish?
Everyone's Woody Allen. Minus the whole pedophilia angle. And I won't get beyond this for much longer, but, like, I was in the camp where it's like, you could have, kind of altered the story, you know, for lack of a better word, appropriated the story so that he could have been, you know, let's say the character is Chinese, you know, like a Chinese American who has lost touch with his roots or something like that. And it's about him learning about his past and his ancestry or something like that. Versus, like, I'm a white dude who's, like, he's literally, like, a rich white guy. It's like Eric Trump going into the fucking Himalayas and learning kung fu, and it's like, oh, no.
Like, did you see the SNL Political Family Feud?
No.
Oh man, the way they did the Trump kids were, Ivanka was the only one playing, but then Eric and Don Jr. Just rose up from behind her, and they started talking like, "I'm Donald Jr. I'm the brains. I'm Ivanka. I'm the beauty. I'm Eric."
Oh man. Well, speaking of SNL, is there anything else you want to say, Casey?
Yes, I would, Kent. Live from New York, it's Geeks at Large.
Ah! It's Geeks at Large. With Casey Gerard.
And your host,
Taylor Carlisle.
Thank you, thank you. It is an honor to host Geeks at Large. I tell you what, and, you know, it's an institution. It's been around for, you know, what, 40 fucking goddamn years, right? I mean, right?
So,
What? Casey.
Boo. Casey. Boo, I can do a better monologue than you.
You can?
Yeah.
I mean, do you want to try?
Sure. Now is the winter of our discontent. Made summer by...
Like you're confusing monologue with soliloquy.
Well, then.
Well, fuck.
Why don't I introduce you to my friend Gollum? My precious. And then we beat them up. Fuck. You'd be so good at quoting Gollum.
Speaking of Gollum, we're actually going to...
And then I found that ring and I just couldn't quote Gollum anymore.
Since we're in the... month of Spooktober. You came
The 14th month, yes.
The 14th month of Spooktober on the calendar year. We figured we would talk about a couple things this segment. But the main meat of it is going to be October Halloween horror themed, and Casey and I discussed it, and we actually want to chat a little bit about horror comedies and what makes a good one.
Yeah, because unless you count something like Goosebumps or Are You Afraid of Dark, we haven't really talked about that much here.
No.
Or on the last show. What did we call it? Oh, yeah, Yu-Gi-Oh! That was our last show.
I loved Yu-Gi-Oh! I can't believe we had a show for 5 years called Yu-Gi-Oh!
it was a pretty good show.
It was a good show!
Yeah. My favorite part was when you threw down all those monsters in one turn, and I said it was against the rules, and then I took away your life points.
Yeah, and then you started dueling on motorcycles, and it just jumped the shark.
Yeah.
So now we're Geeks at Large.
Really a mistake for us to get those motorcycles.
Those were really expensive motorcycles, and one of us was kind of...
Since it was an audio show, why do we even need to get...
There was episodes where you just couldn't hear what we were talking about over motorcycles.
So, Casey, what'd you think of Man of Steel? I have an idea to pitch for you. The Motorcycle Reunion Christmas Special.
Most people who are listening to this, if there's anyone listening to this, is probably like, what the fuck are they talking about?
Our longtime listeners will remember when we had motorcycles.
Motorcycle.
And we all got reverse mohawks.
We were just rebels in college, man.
Yeah,
you could
man.
Say we were geeks at college.
Without a cause.
Without a cause.
Geeks without a cause. Why didn't we name this up the post show Geeks Without a College?
Because it was a lot easier to make it this.
Easier isn't always better, Carlisle.
For me, it is.
Yeah, I guess you're the one who puts effort in. I just come here and say funny shit.
Waggity schmackity doo. So, Casey, why don't you start us on this whole horror comedy discussion?
Well, really, the history of the horror comedy goes all the way back to 1992.
Dickety-two?
We had to say dickety because the Kaiser Solar were 20. There you go, Simpsons fans. No. Honestly, horror comedies have been a staple of cinema as long as we've had horror movies. Like, I think it was the writer of Son of Kong, what she said was, we can't make him bigger, so we're going to make him funnier. So there's a lot more jokes in Son of Kong than in King Kong. And a lot of them kind of land still to this day. Like, there's stuff with, there's stuff where one of the characters has a pet chimp, and he just does stupid shit, and Carl Denham, the filmmaker, just keeps on looking. It's like, what the hell am I watching?
I'm just imagining it, like, Kong just comes out, and, like, there's, like, a brick wall and a mic stand, and he's wearing, like, a loose tie, and just does, like, a stand-up bit. That's where, like, when you
What's the deal with airplane food? They taste horrible.
Airplanes taste horrible.
And they're always shooting at you. Then you fall.
Welp.
Anyway, biggest disappointment with New York, have yet to see a giant gorilla.
Man.
It's just false advertising.
Beauty did not, in fact, kill the beast. Just saying. 6 out of 10, New York City.
Or maybe Beauty did kill the beast, and that's why I don't see it anymore.
Or maybe, yeah, I guess that's true. Yeah. That should be an episode of Girls.
Beauty kills the beast.
Lena Dunham kills the beast.
Lena Dunham versus the gorillas.
So anyway.
You know, I just guarantee it's like 1,000 Harambe comments.
I hope so, because that would mean we get comments.
Yeah. They're all Harambe. You have to embrace your fan base. And our fan base want to take out their penises and show them to Harambe.
And you know what? That's just their prerogative, man. I mean, You know.
Who doesn't flash your dick in front of gorillas? That's why I'm not allowed into Cincinnati Zoo.
Speaking of dicks out for Harambe, horror comedies.
I've missed your transitions.
See?
I've also missed Fisher's transitions more.
Wow, okay, fine. Fuck you, Casey.
No, horror comedies. I got the idea because they showed Young Frankenstein all across the nation. Maybe you watched it, or maybe you didn't. I don't care.
maybe not. Maybe go fuck yourself.
No, they showed Young Frankenstein, and it was just I think I've probably seen that movie 50 times. It's a solid 3.5 out of 5.
It's a good movie to see 50,000 times.
No, it is genuinely is one of the best movies ever made. And a lot of people use it as a source of like, you know, this is what spoof movies need to be like. And yeah, they're right. But it got me thinking about what is a good horror comedy? Like, Taylor, if you had to describe a good horror comedy, what's the easiest thing you could say?
I would say one that, see, this is the tough part, because it's like, you know, it has qualities of a horror movie, but it doesn't necessarily have to be scary.
That's the thing most people say, it makes you laugh, but it also scares you. And those people are either wrong or scare real easily.
Yeah, like, Young Frankenstein's like, not...
too, there's not a legitimate scare in that movie.
Yeah.
But it's amazing, and it's hilarious.
Yeah.
And why is that, you might ask? Well, I'm glad you asked, other me. Now, and I would argue that a horror comedy does not need to be scary. In fact, very few of them are. It's very hard to get both the fear receptors and the humor receptors in your brain working at the same time, because... the humor tends to dispel the fear. If you're laughing, then the tension is gone, and the tension is where the fear comes from.
Yeah.
But what Evil Dead 2, even though none of the fear receptors go off, what does go off is the adrenaline.
I was going to say, like, a lot of these horror comedies, like, I think you could get they could still be thrilling. Like, I think of like, Shaun of the Dead, which would be another one. And, like... that movie, you know, the climax of that movie is pretty harrowing, actually, because, you know, it's a zombie comedy, yes, but it's still a zombie movie where people die.
And there's genuinely there's genuine pathos, and you feel bad when you find out that Sean's mom was bitten.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert.
For a 12-year-old movie.
It's a Boyhood, old people. Go watch it.
It's a boy. That's what I'm going to say from now on. All movies that are 12 years old are a Boyhood.
Boyhood movie. I've been saying that for a year.
Hi, Birdman, Chuck Longer.
Boyhood is almost a quarter Boyhood old now.
Man. So anyway.
I don't care for that movie.
Keep going, Casey.
Oh. No, I just want to wistfully, nonchalantly say that Boyhood sucks, but that's just me. No, but Shaun of the Dead is very much on the comedy end of the horror comedy spectrum. And, in fact, most horror comedies, I would argue most horror comedies have a sense of parody of the horror genre to them. Because even what, like, say, Evil Dead 2 at points is almost a parody of Evil Dead 1.
Right.
It's also, and part of that was, do you know the story about Evil Dead 1 and 2? How they lost the rights to Evil Dead 1?
I believe so. I think I remember vaguely the details.
Yeah, when they were filming Evil Dead 2, they couldn't get the rights to Evil Dead 1. That's why the first quarter of Evil Dead 2 is a recap of Evil Dead 1 with new footage. So it's technically Evil Dead 2 is also a remake.
Mm-hmm. It's like a half remake, and then at some point it does its own thing.
Yeah, well, it's like 10-minute remake.
Yeah.
80-minute sequel. Mm-hmm. And it's insane.
Yep.
Oh, giant tree monsters. and hands that get cut off and give you the middle finger.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like, that's the thing. That movie's a horror comedy just because it does things that horror movies do, but it does them in such an insane possible way.
And I think there are parts where I could see, like, someone getting, not scared, but freaked out. Like, I mean, obviously, like, him cutting off his hand.
But it's grotesque.
Yeah, there's grotesqueness, there's grotesque qualities to the movie that can make you go, ew, or, like, kind of freak you out a little bit.
And there's... The way I put it is, they play their horror trope straight.
Right.
And Young Frankenstein does the same thing. Like, there's shots or establishing scenes or sets that look like they're out of old Universal Monster movies.
Well, yeah, because I think that was... Well, I mean, they use some of the same sets, correct?
They reconstructed the sets that... They don't look like the same sets, but they look like they're in the style of... Because honestly, the Frankenstein movies never had that much continuity. Anyway, you look at the Frankenstein Manor and Frankenstein and Bride of Frankenstein is completely, not only completely different sets, they're completely different architectural styles.
Mm-hmm.
Like, one is an old Victorian manor, the other one is a large house somewhere in East Germany.
Right. And I think that's part of it, and like, you know, we talk about, when you're just talking about spoofs or parodies as a whole, the best ones are made lovingly.
Yeah.
Right? So, like, you look at a movie like Young Frankenstein, and you can tell that Mel Brooks and company love and admire the Universal horror movies because of the attention to detail. Like, I think that's another thing, too. Like, you can tell that, like, Sam Raimi is a horror fan when he makes stuff like Evil Dead. Because...
And even with the stuff that Evil Dead inspired, like Peter Jackson's early movies, like Brain Dead or The Two Towers.
Or The Frighting.
I just want to run that by you. The movie where the guy kills 50 zombies with a lawnmower is directed by the same guy who made The Lord of the Rings.
Yep.
And Heavenly Creatures.
And Heavenly Creatures.
The best horror comedy.
Yes. Yeah.
No, it's seriously, just go back and watch Dead Alive and Brain Dead and Meet the Feebles and go, that guy's going to win a Best Director Oscar.
Yeah, that guy's going to, like, tie the record for most Oscar wins for a movie. That guy.
He's amazing.
And then he's going to resurrect that corpse and then, yeah, bleed it dry. and openly admit that he's just like, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing.
Whatever happened? What's he done since A Hobbit?
Nothing.
I think they're still doing Tintin 2.
I think they're slowly working on that. Tintin squared.
Tin Man?
I mean, the last Hobbit movie wasn't that long ago.
2014, so yeah, 2 years.
Yeah, 2 years, not even 2 years, technically.
And he probably wanted a break after that.
Yeah. So, but anyway, so yeah, like, Young Frankenstein, you know, is, it just bleeds love for the source material, and so does Shaun of the Dead. Like, you have a knowledge of what you're parodying, and you have, you know how that genre or subject matter ticks, right?
And that's what Edgar Wright does with his comedies. What was the TV show that they did that I don't like?
Spaced.
Yeah, Spaced. Like, Spaced does have some of the same tropes of, I almost want to say rom sitcoms or whatever it was in the 90s, but it parodies them lovingly, and there's a lot of geek culture references.
Yeah.
And Shaun of the Dead, you know, obviously a lot of horror movie stuff, especially a lot of zombie movies. There's that, we're coming to get you, Barbara. That's one of the best lines in that movie.
Mm-hmm.
And then Hot Fuzz, obviously a lot of action movies.
Yeah.
And that might be some of the reason I don't care for Hot Fuzz. It's just I'm not crazy about that era of action movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the only one of those I like is Die Hard, and so when I don't really have the same frame of reference, that might be the reason why Hot Fuzz doesn't work for me.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, you got Point Break and you got Bad Boys 2, and, like, I would argue that I would personally say that Hot Fuzz is better than at least Bad Boys 2, but that's just me.
Well, one of them's Michael Bay.
Yeah, I'm just saying. I mean, there might be people that are like, fuck you, shut up, or whatever, because I know, like, Bad Boys and Bad Boys 2 has its fans. But
I mean, I don't get it. I'm just not a fan of that era of action movie.
Well, the thing is that it covers like 25 years of action movies.
And I'm not a fan of those 25 years of action movies.
Except Die Hard.
Yeah, Die Hard. Well, Die Hard's different. Like, even if you're not enjoying the action stuff in Die Hard, you can get a kick out of John McClane's reacting to everything.
Mm-hmm. Which they kind of do a little bit in Hot Fuzz. Like, they kind of
do. It's a parody of that.
Yeah.
Like, they're, like, just how they react to stuff like The Missing Swan or all the stupid things Nick Frost says in it.
Mm-hmm. Or even, like, yeah.
But either way, that's going down the rabbit hole of I don't like Hot Fuzz, and I think that might be a discussion for another day.
No, you're just wrong at the end.
Every time we bring that up, that just turns out to be the consensus. No, Casey's wrong.
Exactly.
One day we'll sit down and have a trial for Hot Fuzz.
And you'll lose.
I might. No, put me up against Neil and we'll see. We'll duke it out.
Okay.
Fair warning, I'm not afraid to go dirty on Neil.
You're not afraid to go below the belt. Neil brings up some
excellent points about Hot Fuzz, but did you know he pooped his pants at camp one year? Can you trust Neil Poopy Pants Butler to give a good defense of Hot Fuzz? I think not.
Back and to the left. Back and to the left.
Clown to the left of me, Joker's to the right. Here I am, getting shot by Lee Harvey Oswald.
Okay, so we've named a couple good horror comedies. What are some bad ones you can think of that don't do it right?
Scary Movie, if that counts.
Yeah, like, the Scary Movies are interesting because they're like, there's like this weird pedigree that, you know, because it's kind of spun off from the Zucker and Abrams stuff.
And Zucker and Abrams stuff did have a history of looking schlocky.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like the Scary Movies were the start of the horror or spoof movies just need to be made really quickly and look like a low budget interpretation of what you see in a big movie.
Well, I feel like...
And it's
like,
not as guilty as, say, you know, Meet the Spartans.
Right. Well, that's the thing, is like...
That's also literally the lowest bar in cinema.
Well, yeah. Like, that's the thing I was going to say, is like, we could talk about how the, you know, scary movies are uneven as fuck. But then it's like, then you look at the Zucker, like, Friedberg and Seltzer, and it's like, they just make them look like high art in comparison. And I haven't seen the first scary movie in fucking forever. And I remember, like, here's the thing about the early ones, is that they're not just, like, references. You know, like, that's just, that's one of the things that just sucks about the Friedberg and Seltzer movies, is that they're just fucking non sequitur reference after another, like one after the other, and it's just like
they're not actually movies, they're collections of scenes,
and there's no context to it, versus, you know, the scary movie ones, at least the earlier ones, like there's context to it. I mean, they're kind of cobbled together. Like, I remember in 3, because 3 parodies a lot of M. Night Shyamalan stuff. You know, it parodies Signs, it parodies The Sixth Sense, it has Charlie Sheen.
Wait a minute. Does The Happening count as a horror comedy?
It's not intentionally.
Well, he has retroactively said, like, no, it's meant to be.
Oh, fuck you, M. Night. No, it wasn't.
Like, when you look at, there's scenes that are genuinely there to lighten the mood. They're just the most awkward scenes.
They just, like, destroy any tension.
So they do get a laugh, just not necessarily the way they want to laugh.
Yeah, like, I'm sure M. Night was like, oh, man, this is a gut buster here about the man talking about hot dogs. Like,
maybe we should do a commentary for The Happening.
We probably should. That movie is just so fucking stupid and amazing. But I am not going to buy for a second that was intentionally a comedy. Fuck you, M. Night. Don't pull a Tommy Wiseau here, motherfucker. I believe Tommy Wiseau more. That the
come
room.
On, Roy, keep on rolling.
Keep on rolling. There's a super girl. What you keep on? What? No.
I'm talking to a plastic plant.
Oh, man.
Like, think about that. There's no way you can write that scene thinking this is gonna be serious drama. He had to know, okay, this is gonna be the comedic relief scene, and it works. It makes you laugh, but not in the way he intended.
Yeah.
Like, I always say that there's no such thing as a so bad it's good comedy. Because
comedy comes from, like, a comedy is good if it makes you laugh. Like, it's success. Yeah. It's a comedy success relies solely on whether you enjoy it or not. And, you know, a bad comedy is just dreadful because it's not succeeding at making you laugh.
Yeah, and it usually leaves you bored.
Yeah. You know, that's why something like...
I would argue almost all, with the exception of something like Star Wars Episode II, almost all the worst movies ever made tend to be bad comedies.
Yeah.
Like something... Like, all the ones that are the most uncomfortable to sit through. And, like, at least with something like, I don't know, Manos, The Hands of Fate, you can laugh at it.
Yeah.
You can watch it with people and make jokes.
And people did.
Yeah, and they made a whole lot of money doing it. Yep. It reunited a lost son and father once. You know about that, right?
Yeah, I do.
Good. Manos, The Hands of Fate, it's bringing people together since 1993. Fortunately, it came out in 1966.
So yeah, that would be my thing. Like, okay, so here's an example of, like, you know, it's a lot of dumb humor in the scary movie films, obviously. I know that's not, like, a news flash or whatever. But, like, I know, like, one that I always think back to with Scary Movie 3 is, like, so it's a straight-up parody of Signs, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, like, Charlie Sheen is the Mel Gibson character, and he has, like, a brother, and they run out into the cornfield. And then, like, there's this, like, it's even, like, little stupid
Charlie
stuff.
Sheen is Mel Gibson.
Yeah.
Two people now famous for losing their minds in 2011.
Yep. Just think about it. So, anyway, so, like, and there's, like, this low-angle shot of them, like, running out. Like, you've seen Signs, right?
Yeah.
You know how, like, they originally, like, walk out to the cornfield, and it's, like, low, and they're just kind of looking around?
Yeah, it's the most interesting scene in that movie.
Well, they parody that where it's like just this like so that it's like low angle following them, and they're just like looking around, and there's just like these swooshing sounds of them like spinning around 360, all dramatically and, you know, exaggeratedly. So it's like, you know, it's shit like that. It's not just like, hey, look, it's Michael Jackson, and then like Michael Jackson's in the cornfield dancing, you know.
A little bit of effort.
Yeah, there's actual, like, effort in those movies.
Yeah, there's a ton of that in Young Frankenstein, obviously. That's...
Obviously.
Like, even though that is more of a spoof movie, if we qualify spoof movies as horror comedies, which I'm willing to, again, for the sake of the argument that Cabin in the Woods and Tucker and Dale vs. Evil are both spoof movies as well, or spoof movies and horror comedies, I will put Young Frankenstein in there. And Young Frankenstein is probably the best ever.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's because, you know, Mel Brooks, who
two
Mel
people Gibson, I would like to see interact with each other.
Yeah, Mel Gibson probably isn't a big fan of Mel Brooks, given his ancestral history.
And I imagine that the feeling's kind of mutual.
Probably. Springtime for Mel Gibson. Too, about Mel Gibson. You could pretty much change Springtime for Hitler to Springtime for Gibson, if you wanted.
Springtime for Mel Gibson.
And because Mel Brooks, like, that's what he's known for, is doing these... Because what the thing is, like, he parodies genres and movies, like, specific movies, versus, like, something like Tucker and Dale. Like, I know it's supposed to be like a Friday the 13th or Halloween, I guess, less so.
Well, but Tucker and Dale is kind of, it's very much just the group of kids go out into the woods to party and bone.
Yeah. Which, to be fair, started kind of with Friday the 13th.
I would argue it started with some, like Friday the 13th was the one who said, let's bring it out into the backwoods.
Yeah, that's what I mean, the backwoods part.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, but Friday the 13th in general is kind of a bad Halloween knockoff.
Well, yeah.
Or maybe I'm just biased.
Well, what's funny when you, to go off of that tangent, it's like, you know, the Halloween movies influenced the Friday the 13th movies, and I feel like as time went on, the Friday the 13th movies influenced the Halloween movies.
Oh, definitely.
Which is just kind of a hilarious, like, reversal.
All the supernatural shit that goes on in the Halloween movies later on.
Exactly.
Totally Friday the 13th and Nightmare on Elm Street.
Because, like, that's the thing. Like, Friday the 13th, like, never kind of stepped away from how, like, over-the-top and weird magical bullshit it had. But, like... Well,
in the first one, it did. It there wasn't any of that.
Well, yeah. But then, like...
Except for that total cheat of an ending with young Jason.
Exactly. And then two is where it totally, and then Jason's a killer and shit like that. And, you know, with the Halloween movies, you know, like, you do the first two where there's no, I mean, there's like a tiny implication that there's something kind of weird with Michael, like, supernaturally, but it's never overtly said. And then, of course, you have three, which is its own thing, and then four. And then four is where they kind of start doing that, and then you get to six, where it's just like...
No, at one point he's like, they implanted the seed of evil into him or some shit like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, he's got like a tattoo and he's in a cult and it's fucking bullshit and stupid. And then there's another one with Exhibit.
The low point of the franchise.
And the high point of the franchise is when Exhibit says, trick or treat, motherfucker, and then kicks him.
I thought the high point of the franchise was Rob Zombie's Halloween 2.
Oh, obviously, where that one guy says fuck like 70 times in one scene. Screenwriting.
I was wrong when I said all the worst movies ever made are bad comedies. Halloween 2 by Rob Zombie up there.
Halloween 2 is up there. It's so awful. Like, I want to see the scene where Rob Zombie's writing out that scene. I'm using writing loosely here, for the record, But just a scene where, like, the guy, I want to say...
Well, I can tell you how it's going to go. I can tell you how it's going to go. Rob Zombie is panicking as he's driving to set one day, going, oh, crap, oh, crap, oh, crap, I forgot to write this, I forgot to write this, I forgot to write this. Well, the set's out in the... Fuck. So, Rob, what's the dialogue today? Fuck.
Shit. Fuck. Fuck, shit, fuck.
I fucking hate those movies.
Oh, my God. Yeah, fuck those movies. We're not even talking about, like, whatever, like, what's the opposite of a horror comedy? Like, a horror, like, fucking funeral. Like... Like a horror lobotomy. That's what
a horror autopsy.
Yeah, like that's what those movies are. That,
and we're gonna at the end of this, I am gonna get into stuff like that.
Yeah,
but that can be further down the line. We can.
Halloween 2 is definitely like the antithesis of Young Frankenstein. They're both in the same subgenre or same base genre, I guess. But they're just, like, complete ends of the spectrum. Not just in quality, but just, like, what they're doing to me.
And effort.
To when, like, when I watch.
Like, Mel Brooks probably... I was about to say Mel Brooks probably saw that movie. Mel Brooks hasn't seen that movie. If he did, he would say, I can't believe I fought in World War II for this.
He probably would have, like, died by now. He'd probably been like, that's it.
Fucking... No more for me. No more for
that's
this.
That's it. Fuck you. All right, I'm done. He's going to be like Padme. he lost the will to live.
Don't say that. I want Mel Brooks to live forever.
Well, he's on the course too, man. He's like, what, 92?
Something like that.
Shit.
I'm going to feel really guilty if 2016 claims another.
Hey, man, but at least you'd be like, hey, I lived a long life.
Yeah, David Bowie.
Well, David Bowie lived a significantly shorter life.
Not long enough.
Way to bring down the room, Casey.
Speaking of David Bowie, Labyrinth.
Is that a horror comedy?
No, it's a fantasy movie, and I don't care for it.
Why are you bringing it up then?
It was the. What would you rather have me say? Speaking of David Bowie, The Hunger?
Yes.
That's just really sad, man.
Cat people.
That movie is hilarious.
Yeah.
And it wants to be scary. Like Thanksgiving.
Like, oh my god. So we were talking about this, doing this recording. I just kind of offhandedly brought up Thanksgiving. And if you don't know Thanksgiving, I don't know if I envy you or if you should envy me. Because
I envy that you have yet to discover something.
Well, I don't know. I don't want to hype it up that much.
It's like how sometimes I wish I could trade places with somebody about to gaze on a New York skyline for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so beautiful, and you just want to relive the experience of the first moment you see it again.
That's exactly like Thanksgiving, Casey. So Thanksgiving is one of those... It's not a good movie at all. At all. It's awful.
But it's designed to be a low, schlocky, low-budget horror movie, like a parody of stuff like that.
And I think, like, you know, it's one of the rare... Like, I guess you kind of have to consider it a comedy. Because there's clearly shit in there that's meant to make you laugh.
No, I think the movie's intentionally designed itself to be that way.
And so it's this weird... I know we just said, like, you know, like some of the worst, like, most of the worst movies are bad comedies. And, like, Thanksgiving is not a good movie, but it does make you laugh just of how absurd it is. Because it is schlocky.
And there is a subset of that that's been growing recently. Like, have I ever tried to get you to watch Wolf Cop?
No, but I know of Wolf Cop.
Go watch Wolf Cop.
Yeah.
Wolf Cop, listeners... Go watch Wolf Cop. It's on Netflix. And it is pretty damn amazing.
And that's a horror comedy, right?
Yeah, and it's essentially a parody of the way that people will just make a horror movie for absolutely nothing that belongs on Mystery Science Theater 3000. And there's a lot of those. Like, you don't see them, but people try to – the logic is horror movies are cheap to make. You don't really need a whole lot of acting talent. You can just essentially get people looking for exposure and not pay a whole lot for production, for crew. And maybe you'll get discovered. Maybe you'll get, like, a Netflix deal or something. More often than not, they just fall apart and fade into obscurity.
Well, because – and that's a whole other thing, too, because you have these movies that – we're getting a lot of these movies that are sequels to, like, schlock icons. Like, you have Samurai Cop 2, right?
Yeah, there's people who want to do another troll movie, I'm sure.
Yeah. And it's like, part of the problem is that you have movies like that that are just, you know, these kind of amazing, like, catching lightning in a bottle, you know, of just, and they're not intentionally bad. Like, that's the key, is that you have a movie like, you know, The Room, or that's why I don't think The Room was intentionally a comedy. That's why I don't buy that at all, because
oh, it definitely wasn't. It's too well crafted for it.
Yeah,
and it would be too well poorly crafted.
Yeah, exactly. And like Samurai Cop's exactly like that too. Manos is like that. Time Chasers.
Planet Nine from Outer Space.
Yeah, Planet Nine, yeah.
Yeah, and Thanksgiving and Wolf Cop and movies like that, they're parodies of stuff like that.
Right.
I'd argue that Wolf Cop is actually legitimately a funny movie.
Which, yeah, that's the thing, is like, that's such a rarity that you have a movie that is intentionally schlocky and kind of bad, and it works.
You know? Like, the guy who did, I believe it was Hobgoblins, Rick Sloan.
Yes.
He tried to capitalize on that and do Hobgoblins 2, and it did not exactly work.
Right.
Yeah.
Actually, speaking of Hobgoblins, there was another movie that you wanted to bring up that Hobgoblins was clearly ripping off when it came out.
Oh, yeah. Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Yep, that's the one.
No.
Prince of Darkness? Yeah, totally.
Very obviously. It's something that people don't really think about when they think of horror comedies that I think is totally one. Gremlins.
Yes.
And it just fits the basic bill of it's a comedy that will play its horror trope straight. And it's riding the wave of the I don't want to say family movies of the 80s, so I'm going to say all ages stuff that in the mold of Steven Spielberg. And it follows that formula pretty damn well.
Well, it's kind of like a spin on E.T.
Yeah, it's like it's E.T. and Poltergeist had a baby.
Yep. A really bad Christmas baby.
A really great Christmas baby.
That's subjective.
That's how I found out there was no Santa. That's like Gremlins is willing to be pretty dark. Like, I know I said that almost no horror comedy actually has a trope that actually has a scary scene that works. Gremlins is probably possibly the closest to that, though.
Right.
Like, for me at least, the moment where she tells the story of finding her dad in the chimney is genuinely kind of haunting.
Yeah, that's why it's so infamous. You know.
And it just comes out of nowhere.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, in between, in this movie about these adorable little fuzz monsters.
Little Mogwais.
Yeah, the Mogwais. You know, have we talked about how adorable Gizmo is?
No, but you don't have to, because it's obvious.
Yes, oh my god, I want one.
Voiced by Frank Welker, right?
Really?
I think Frank Welker, or it might have been someone else, I don't remember. Probably. Frank Welker does, like, everybody, dude.
All right. So, he's voiced by Michael J. Fox. And
I love that scene where Gizmo says, "Doc, this is heavy."
Why wasn't there a Back to the Future Gremlins crossover?
Who said there wasn't? Maybe just got buried. Maybe it was just like Indiana Jones. Top men.
Yeah, just wait. There will be an 80s movie remake cinematic universe. Back,
oh my god.
You know, like, your Back to the Future is going to cross over with your Gremlins. Your Gremlins is going to cross over with your E.T. Your E.T. is going to cross over with Adventures in Babysitting.
Are those all Paramount movies?
Actually, very few of them are.
Really? Well, okay, yeah. So, like, what's Back to the Future?
Universal.
Is it? Oh, fuck, okay.
Yeah, and E.T. is also Universal.
Okay.
And I'm pretty sure Adventures in Babysitting and Gremlins are also Universal.
Well, that should be the new, instead of the fucking Universal Monsters one, they should make a Universal a Universal movie cinematic universe of just those movies.
I would be cool. Honestly, I love all those movies. I would probably be cool seeing that.
I think I just got confused because, like, the studio logos were blending into for me, because that was a time where, like, you know, they still had, like, the physical globe spinning for Universal before they had the, you know, animated one, and then, yeah.
Yeah, the physical globe and that mountaintop, they look the same.
Hey, man. Shut up.
No, the ones that Spielberg helmed, they were mostly Universal.
Okay.
In fact, it's a rarity that, I think, was it Paramount who did the Indiana Jones movies?
Yeah, that's why I brought up Paramount.
Yeah, that is very much a rarity for them.
Okay. Well, now he does everything through DreamWorks, right?
Yeah, well, DreamWorks spun off from Universal before they bought him back, but it's his company.
Well, yeah, I knew it was his company.
It's like Amblin 2.0.
Amblin?
It's like Amblin, except they're not starving in a gutter.
Amblin. I love that medication.
But, yeah. Gremlins is a horror comedy, and it does... Like, we've essentially talked about two horror comedies thus far. Ones that are parodies of the genre, and ones that are just really extreme versions of the genre that you can't help but laugh at.
Mm-hmm.
Or, I didn't even say laugh at, laugh with.
Yeah, laugh with.
But Gremlins kind of hits on one that I think it gets really overlooked. Horror stuff that has comedy in there for kids.
Right. It's not an all-ages movie, but it's a kid-friendly movie.
Well, that's why I say all ages. It's,
yeah.
You couldn't take a 4-year-old see it, but you could totally take a 6-year-old see it. And
then they'll cry over the Santa Claus story.
Yeah, but they'll love Gizmo.
It's okay, like, the kids cry. It's like, it's okay, look at Gizmo, look at Gizmo.
Aww. And the thing is about that stuff is... I think that we need more horror like that that reaches out to kids. Like, there should be movies yearly that are like the... Do you remember the scene in E.T. where he goes out into the cornfield and sees E.T. and he just runs off and he just ends up seeing where he would have been and just kind of sits at the fence in awe of what he just saw and he has to find out more?
Yeah.
There should be stuff like that for horror. There should be things that kids go, oh, that kind of scared me. That was fun. Mm-hmm. I kind of want to see more like that.
Exactly.
Like, just take their hand in, and I love it when people do stuff like that. It's why I'm always going to love The Nightmare Before Christmas. It's why I'm always going to love stuff that, you know, doesn't age well. Like, I love Goosebumps. I love Are You Afraid of the Dark. It's trying to get kids into horror. The one that I especially love, because it actually does hold up, is Courage the Cowardly Dog.
Yep. Yeah, Courage is a strange beast because... You know, talking about it aging is because it has this very, like, it's very much like this digitally, it has a very, like, photoshopped look to it, if you know what I mean. Like, a lot of it is very.
The backgrounds, at least.
That's what I meant. Like, it's very much a digitally painted and very, like, realistically textured backgrounds and a lot of weird. It's, you know, you look at something like. The Amazing World of Gumball and how that's just this huge collage of different mediums. You know, you got 2D animation, you got stop motion animation, you've got film, you know, live action, and you got CG and stuff. I think before that, the closest thing we got to that was Courage, because you would get stuff like.
I would compare it to, say, Archer as well.
A little bit, like Archer's a little more, like, unified, if you will, in its art direction. Because I know they use a lot of reference, obviously. It's like, you know, like all the characters are based on real people. Like they brought in people and they drew them, you know, and they made the characters around these people. It's like a movie like, or a game like Half-Life 2, you know, you have like the character of Alex. Alex is based on a real person. And they modeled her after this real woman, stuff like that. Kind of mocapping before they did really mocapping. But like, yeah, with, you know, Archer, it's like they take real photos of like rooms and stuff, and then they basically like kind of illustrate over top of it, as well as like, you know, just use it as reference too. Like,
yeah, it's like a form of rotoscoping then.
Well, not for backgrounds, because backgrounds, it's just, you know, because rotoscoping is the actual animation. And obviously with something like Archer, the animation is all tweening and, you know.
Yeah, and Courage, actually that was the thing that blew my mind as a kid, that Courage the Cowardly Dog will just sometimes have live action stuff. Like, do you remember the one with the tree?
Yeah, the not the giving tree, but yeah, where he had like the mouth.
He pretty much is the giving tree.
Yeah, like not what it's called, I think. But yeah, it's the one where like his mouth is an actual mouth.
Yeah, and it's so weird.
Yeah, like, that's the thing. It's a very weird show. Like, you had... Then they have the episode where they go to New York City and where they have Zwick. You know, name Schwick. Jess Schwick. Don't ever call me Bushwick. Jess Schwick. That guy? Do you remember him?
I don't.
Oh, my God. Yeah, he's a roach. Like, you know, because New York.
Yeah, no... I remember the roach. I don't remember that line. Which,
yeah, because his name's Schwick. Like, his name's Bushwick, but call me Schwick, just Schwick. Never call me Bushwick. That's what he says.
Which is amazing, because I live in Bushwick.
Yeah. and there's stuff like that in that movie, or in that episode, like, Courage is walking around this apartment building trying to get a package for Schwick. And, like, one of them has, like, this claymation, like, it's almost like... You remember in Pee-wee's Playhouse, you had Craig Bartlett, who was a creator of Hey Arnold, made those Hey Arnold claymation bits, right?
I didn't know that was a thing.
Yeah, there's claymation bits in Pee-wee's Playhouse that was made by Craig Bartlett. That's where Arnold started. And it's kind of like that, where it's like, she turns around, she has like a crazy, like, you know, Beetlejuice-like screaming face, you know? And so it's like that kind of mixed media in Courage Cowardly Dog, which I think...
Like, when they're watching TV, it was constantly live-action stuff. And did they actually use footage from old horror movies?
Yes, probably. Like, black and white, like, Cabinet of Dr. Caligari type stuff, yeah.
Yeah. And if not, they got it to look enough like it that it fooled me, at least at that age.
Yeah, definitely. And, like, it's cool because, like, all the backgrounds would have, like, very realistic texturing. And, like, it would be, like, highly rendered. And it was very... There's a very dreamlike quality to a lot of Courage. You know, because like a lot of...
Their own logic applied.
Yeah. There's a surrealist edge to it, which is always... Which was... Like, it was also kind of like Baby's First Surrealism.
Yeah, but those steps in there, they wouldn't necessarily pull punches. They would do some freaky stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Like Baron Tarant, or no, Quentin Tarantella, was it?
Yeah, Quentin Tarantella, and then there was another guy. I forget what his name was, but it was another famous...
But they were zombies.
Yeah, they were zombies, and they would rise from the dead, and he tried to rise up his former buddy, who's also a zombie, whose name is also a play on a famous actor or director or something.
But we can't remember who it is.
But we can't remember.
It's on Netflix, though, so we should watch it sometime.
Yeah, and of course, I remember, you have to mention the Mummy one. The Ramsey one with the slab.
I don't remember that one.
My fucking God, you don't, Case? Okay. Basically what it was is that it was a mummy, you know, type episode where they find this slab from ancient Egypt, and it's got these curses on it, which is like locusts. And I think fog and, like, frogs. And then one was... this is where, like... This is another good example of the mixed media quality of the show, because the ghost, the spirit, the mummy guy was, like, this weirdly CG-looking dude, but he was, like, really primitive-looking CG, which kind of made it even creepier. You know,
think actually, of, yeah, I'm looking at images right now. This is cool.
Yeah, and if I remember, I know for a fact that I have some friends that are like, that fucked me up as a kid. Because he would like always talk like, return the slab or suffer my curse, you know. So it'd be like really freaky. And like, there's a shot in the episode that I always will remember where it's just like, I think it might be like Eustace looking out the screen door. And it's just like this wide shot and you just see him off in the distance, this like mummy ghost guy. And it's like, fuck that. When you're like 9 years old, you're like, oh, fuck that shit. And it's also known for the song. Like, one of the curses was like this this song that played constantly that went like, the man in gauze, King Ramsay, and like it just played on that as a loop.
Okay,
and like,
do you remember that song?
You remember that song. And like, and there's like a, like, Courage eventually finds the record player, just like breaks the record angrily. But that's an example of just how it's like, it's this freaky thing, you know, because the bar's lowered in terms of like what's scary, obviously, with a kid most often. That's why when you watch a lot of Goosebumps or Are You Afraid of the Dark, and it's like,
oh, Are You Afraid of the Dark legitimately scared me to the point where I couldn't watch it.
Yeah. There's like, still that one episode where like the like bloody skeleton dude in the pool. That's like, how did this ever pass any sort of kid like programming board? Like, how the fuck? Because it looks like some shit out of like some hardcore like horror movie.
Well, don't you remember the little thing that they would put at the beginning of Are You Afraid of the Dark? That's why we have rated this Y7.
Y7FV.
Y7, it's like the PG-13 for 7-year-olds.
Yeah, I remember the kid, we were like, ooh. It's okay, Mom. It's Y7. I got this.
And I'm at least 8.
I'm 7.5. I got this. I'm good.
We skipped you 2 crates. You're really 6.
Oh, oh fuck, no. I'm not ready. I flew too close to the sun.
I'm scared.
Call me forevermore. Forevermore, call me Icarus. No!
Nevermore. Okay. Actually, that's a horror comedy thing. The Simpsons, Treehouse of Horror is enough.
Oh, fuck, that's right. Yeah, I mean, that's obviously a little higher age group.
Yeah, like, on the spectrum of horror comedy, especially early on, they would genuinely try to do horror stuff where the Simpsons were characters.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's the first one is the one where they have to spend a night at the creepy house.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially, there's a couple tiny jokes in there, but really it's them, like, it's them trying to mess with one, or them getting tormented by the house, and the end of it was Marge saying, listen, this is our family, if you get, you can't just get us to kill each other, you have to learn to live with us, and the house decided to invert it on itself, like in Poltergeist.
Yeah, I remember that.
And Lisa's like, you chose to destroy itself than to live with us, can't help but feel a little rejected. Yeah, but no, I'm a big fan of when people do things to appeal to kids, I'll also get them in horror. Because Courage actually, I think, found a really great balance. Because not every episode is like that. Like, Doc Gerbil's world doesn't have any horror elements, really, besides that song.
But it is weird.
Oh, it's super, again, going back to what you said, it's babies for surrealism.
Yeah.
Like, the way that that episode used music.
Yeah, there's... Well, like, that's the thing, is, like...
In fact, the way Courage in general used music is
Courage,
awesome.
Even if, like, something, like, scary, quote-unquote, wasn't going on, there'd still be, like, really intense kind of, you know, off-putting music. You know?
Like, proto-Twin Peaks stuff.
Well, it was after Twin Peaks, but yeah.
It's like post-proto-Twin Peaks.
Yeah, I could even say, I don't know if you've watched much of it, but I mean, like, Gravity Falls is kind of like that.
I watched a few episodes, and I loved them all. I just never watch anymore.
You should, because the show's over with now, so. But there's a handful of episodes that's actually genuinely thrilling and, like puts you on edge and is kind of freaky. Like, there's an episode that deals with a bunker, and that's all I'll say, but it gets pretty freaky. And I that's probably the most recent example I can think of that I've seen, in terms of, like, kind of creepy shit with kids, for kids' entertainment.
Yeah, there's, like, a lot of the edgier, cartoons I've always done, like, Invader Zim kind of did that.
Yeah.
Just with freaky, freaky visuals.
Hey, man, I remember Poop Dog.
But in between those freaky visuals, or Invader Zim talking about how you'll obey the fist, or the... Do you remember the episode where he stole the organs?
Oh my god, that one fucked me up as a kid. That's another episode where I'm like, how did this get by anybody? Like,
Nickelodeon just apparently said, like, yeah, sure, whatever.
Yeah, just put a Y7 on it, whatever, fuck it.
Yeah, until they actually saw the episode, like, why didn't we approve that?
Yeah, like, yeah, that was, I forget what that one was called. It was like Harvest or some shit like that.
And it's, yeah, like, I think it was The Harvest.
Yeah, it's like, oh my god.
Which is a horrifying name.
Ugh.
But no, I love it when people are willing to take the risk and try to get kids a little bit into horror stuff. I think that's part of the reason people really like Stranger Things. It was reminding them of that.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of unfortunate. Like Stranger Things is great, and I loved it. But it's like, I almost wish it was like aimed a little younger too, like a little more kid friendly.
Well, it wasn't made for the kids who have watched. It was aimed for kids who would have watched those movies rather than the target audience of those movies.
Yeah.
And I'm right there with you. I kind of wish that it was a little bit more kid-friendly. But at the same time, I like that people always talk about, like, oh, it's such a throwback to Spielberg movies of the 80s. And it is a throwback to that by way of David Lynch.
Yeah, it's definitely a hodgepodge, you know, where, like, yeah, the whole, like, because I feel like a lot of the Spielberg comparisons are primarily just, like, aesthetic.
Yeah, or, like... And they flat out lifted shots from Spielberg, and that, I don't even mean that as a criticism, I mean that as praise.
Yeah. I mean, if you're gonna steal from, if you're gonna take something from somebody, take it from some of the best, you know? But it's, like, yeah, because, I mean, I'm trying to think, like, I mean, they swear sometimes, obviously there's, like, a quasi-sex scene at one point, and there's some violence and stuff. But it's like, if you took that out, I mean, it probably wouldn't lose too much, really. Because I think the quality is good enough that it's not like, oh man, it's the maturity of the subject that makes it, you know.
No, it's like Full Metal Jacket. If you made it for kids, I'd be okay with that too.
Yeah, man, if you made The Shining for kids, it'd be great.
No, I would actually consider, like, if they said, we're going to redo it, do you remember a few years ago when The King's Speech got re-edited as a PG-13 movie?
Oh, yes. I remember that
bullshit. I'm against stuff like that. It feels like a form of censorship just for the sake of money.
Yeah.
I'd be kind of okay with them doing it for Stranger Things.
Right.
Like, I'm legally not allowed near anybody under 14 until the statute of limitations expires, but...
Casey, don't say that on my podcast, please.
That restraining order has really made it difficult living next to a park.
Why did you move to New York City where there's kids everywhere?
No. It's only like 50 feet. I'm fine, except for when one of the kids gets a little bit too close to the fence in the park, then I have to walk backwards a bit.
You know, it's not my fault that my van with the tinted windows happens to have fucking candy painted on the side. I can't.
It was there when I bought it.
I don't have the money to paint over it. God.
Yeah, I got a real great deal on it, and I thought I could on a used windowless van that says free candy.
Yep.
No, yeah, I would be totally cool with a re-edit of Stranger Things that you could show to kids to get them into stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, essentially say, like, oh, wow, you thought that was cool? Hey, how about you try this E.T. or this Gremlins?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, that's a horror comedy, I guess. No, in the venue of horror aimed at younger audiences, I'm always a big fan of when people do that.
Yeah, because it's such a rarity, and it's also...
I don't think it's important. I think it...
Well, yeah, it's important. Yeah, it's definitely important, because it's introducing this whole genre that can, like, completely kind of change a kid's taste in entertainment.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't even say, like, oh, it'll change your taste in entertainment. The way I'm thinking about it is, if they do it, if a kid gets into that stuff, they might be less scared going into the world.
That's true.
Like when you, if you, and I'm guessing I'm like one of those people who says that parents these days just are ruining their kids, and I don't typically agree with that stuff. If anything, I think that we're doing stuff a lot better than we were 10 or 20 or 30 or 40 years ago.
Yeah.
But I think that it actually wouldn't be too bad a thing for us to show our kids stuff that's a little bit darker or a little bit more adult oriented. Mm-hmm. Just so it's not such a whiplash as they get older. Like, just wean them into it.
Well, even with stuff like, and this is going back to, like, you know, the late Gene Wilder and Young Frankenstein. It's like, you could even show kids, like, Willy Wonka. Because Willy Wonka has dark bits to it.
Oh my god, that tunnel.
Yeah, the tunnel, you know, the Violet stuff, the Augustus stuff. Mike TV shrinking, like, there's a lot of fucked up shit when you stop and look at it. And I remember hearing...
Taylor, can I just give you one sentence? I need you to tell me if you would pay to see this. David Cronenberg's Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Oh my god, David Lynch's Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
She was human, and now she is blueberry.
Yes! Because I watched... You know, when Gene Wilder passed away, I watched a bunch of interviews and stuff with him. And I think he was on Conan. This is years ago. This was like 10 years ago, at least. And he was talking about how, like, you know, the original Willy Wonka wasn't a success financially. You know, and, like, I think he talked about how, like, the parents didn't want to show their kids to it. The kids love it, but the parents didn't want to show it to them. You know, because of how dark it could get. And it's like, that's the kind of stuff that we need to kind of step away from. Like, I'm not saying show your kid, you know, fucking Silence of the Lambs when they turn 8.
I'd be cool with that, too.
Don't do that. Unless you want, like, fucking Jeffrey Dahmer's son the second. But, like, definitely don't feel like you can't show your kids, like, Goosebumps or... You know, Are You Afraid of the Dark or Courage the Cowardly Dog? All these shows we're naming, you know, E.T. And maybe when they're like 10 or whatever, show them, you know, Stranger Things and just kind of go through it a little, you know, knowing that it's going to be a little more adult. But you know what I mean? Like, you know, show your kids, expose your kids to new types of films and don't isolate them too much, you know. That's all I'm saying.
No. Well, I'm right there with you. Get your kids scare your kids until they get less scary.
Like, I mean, I'm also one of those people that, like, hates when, like, parents bring, like, young kids into an R-rated movie. It's like, why are you doing this? But...
Okay, well, that's different.
Yeah, that's a different thing.
Like, just give them a taste of it. You don't need to show them Rob Zombie's Halloween.
Why would you do that? That's child abuse. I will report you to child services if you fucking do that to your child. I will find you, and I will...
It's like showing your kids photos of Ted Cruz. Why would you do that?
He was just on MSNBC. There was nothing I could do. The remote fell, and I couldn't find it, and I couldn't change the remote. I couldn't change the channel.
Three strikes.
Three strikes. Why am I persecuted?
Barry showed photos of Ted Cruz to his 8-year-old son. He's serving a 16-year prison sentence.
Oh my god. So, okay, so is there anything else you want to say about horror comedies and... I mean, I would say my last bit is, like, show them Young Frankenstein.
Young Frankenstein will get you into old horror stuff. Like,
yeah.
I'm actually really happy with how I discovered horror, because I originally got into 30s horror movies. And then from there, I worked my way up to 50s horror movies. And from there, I worked my way up to 80s horror movies and 70s horror movies, and then up to today stuff.
Yep.
I went through it chronologically.
Yeah, because that's the thing, too, is, like, if you want to... I mean, by today's standards, the old Universal stuff, you know, is pretty tame.
You could probably show a kid Bride of Frankenstein.
You could show a kid Frankenstein, or even Dracula, or the Wolfman, even, maybe.
And Wolfman is probably the only one I wouldn't consider showing to people, or kids, just because there's a little bit of proto-body horror in there.
Yeah, that's the next step.
Yeah, next step, and then and sooner or later they'll be ready for The Fly.
Yeah. Yep. They'll want you know, tickle me Brundlefly
Have you ever Googled Brundlefly fan art? It's a thing.
Oh, I'm sure it is. There's a absolutely.
I ship Brundle and Fly. I call my pairing Brundlefly.
I like to ship Seth Brundle and Flea, the bassist for Red Hot Chili Peppers. So he's Brundle Flea.
I ship Seth Brundle and Brundlefly. I hope they get together and have a baby.
I love shipping Seth Brundle and Seth Rogen.
Seth Brundle. Seth. You know, I would love to see Seth Rogen in a remake of The Fly.
Right? Oh, no. Like, just like a stoner who walks into a teleporter.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
I fly, because I have wings out, I'm flying.
Whoa. What?
I love that movie.
I love Seth Rogen's The Fly 2, Casey. Otherwise known as The Fly 2.
He plays the baby.
Yep.
So, we're about to wrap this up on horror comedies, but there's one more thing that I want to mention, and that's probably one of the more famous of them. It's recently, at least, Cabin in the Woods.
Yep.
Which is, it goes into what we were talking about at the beginning, the fine line between a horror comedy and a horror satire. And I would argue that it's straight up satire in that it has a message it wants to say. And its message is fuck horror needs to die. No, it is saying the cliches that you have become accustomed to are no longer creative. It's just the same building blocks, just reorganized here, a little bit different there. And it now lacks all its luster, and it's essentially calling for the deconstruction and rebuilding of horror as a genre. And I don't think it's necessary because of what it was saying there, but I think that it came along at the right time. Much like, would it be wrong for me to compare Cabin in the Woods to the Beatles' Sgt. Pepper?
I guess not. I'm not going to stop you. You got something going. Just go.
Sgt. Pepper, I don't think is necessarily the turning point of music in the same way that Star Wars is the turning point of summer cinema. But I think that on the curve of what you can do with rock music as psychedelia and hard rock was embraced, Sgt. Pepper was probably the midpoint of that curve where you can definitely see the arc move.
Right.
And I think that Cabin in the Woods is that for horror movies, where people are getting – look at where horror movies were in the early and mid and even late 2000s. It was a lot like where summer blockbusters are now. They are franchises and big crossovers. You had your Freddy versus Jasons, your Alien versus Predator, and I'm not even saying they were objectively bad. They're just – that's what they were. It's Saw 1 through 9.
7, but yeah.
I guarantee you they made 9 and released 7. No, you're...
they're trying to make another one, by the way.
Damn it, that's disproving what I'm saying. But that's where you got your – that's where you got stuff like going to Halloween Resurrection and then finally to Halloween remakes. It's where you got your Friday the 13th stuff and your Nightmare on Elm Street stuff that goes into remaking both of those. It's just horror franchises and a lot of lackluster stuff. And as that was dying, there was that period where they where everything was a found footage movie, and people turned on that pretty quickly because people turn on trends. And right now, at well, Cabin in the Woods was may not have been the final nail in the coffin for the slasher and monster era of horror stuff. It was definitely probably the death certificate, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And they did, and since then we've actually done a shift in horror. I don't necessarily want to call it prophetic, but it definitely came along at the right time, because now look at the big horror movies of the last few years, stuff like The Babadook, stuff like Trollhunter, it's stuff like It Follows, it's stuff like
The Conjuring. And even this year you have Don't Breathe.
Yeah, Don't Breathe, which is kind of in the same vein as Green Room.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's...
Did you see Green Room, by the way?
I did not. I really want to, though.
Okay, because I watched Green Room when I was with Neil and Steven in Atlanta, and I wouldn't call it a horror movie. It's a thriller, I would say, if I had to categorize it.
Well, from the way people described Don't Breathe, it sounded like it was a version of Green Room, where Green Room is about somebody trying to escape from something, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and that's more or less Don't Breathe, where the person they're trying to escape from happens to be blind.
Yeah. Well, I feel like Don't Breathe is more like, you know, it's like a weird reworking of, like, a horror movie, where it's like, but the monster is this blind guy from Avatar.
Oh my god, he wasn't Avatar.
Yeah, he's the shock and awe guy.
Yeah, that's where I know him from.
He was the racist sergeant against the blue people in Avatar.
He was not Arlie Ermey.
Yeah.
But it's kind of that, but they spin it a different way, because the reason that they go into the guy's house is because they all want to get out of Detroit, because they all have a dream of one day waking up in a place that isn't Detroit.
They want to go to Cleveland.
We're not Detroit.
We're not Detroit.
And and so they go to his house because they know that he has a lump sum of cash they can steal.
Mm-hmm.
And just do this one job, and then they can get out of the city. You know, one more job, man.
It's the last job. I retire tomorrow.
And that's when prom is.
And the prom tomorrow.
Which I'm going to because my wife just left me. But it starts off like that. Like, that's the premise, and it's way off from where it would have been in, you know, the 80s and 90s and 2000s, where it's like, oh, these kids are just going in here to bone, and they don't know there's this blind guy who's going to murder them.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. That could have been a Friday the 13th movie.
I mean, a typical Detroit evening, if I must say.
That's where they... But Don't Breathe, even though it, again, walks that line between horror and thriller right there. And you might be right that Green Room is more thrillery. Like I said, I haven't seen it. Maybe I'm completely full of crap. Maybe the entire reason people just listen to this is wrong.
Probably.
maybe we should take our dicks out for Harambe.
that meme's totally not dead.
And yet it keeps coming back, unlike Harambe.
It's like I said on Twitter once. I think Harambe jokes have been deader longer than Harambe.
Memes are weird, yo.
Memes are weird, yo.
But I think that we have entered a new phase of horror, where, like, you know, The Conjuring, it's about experienced experts in this field going and helping this family out. And it doesn't really follow a lot of the horror cliches, even though, you know, the spinoff Annabelle does.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you have something like that. The Babadook is very different from a lot of horror movies, even though it pays homage to a lot of horror movies.
I was gonna say, like, I would classify that and, like, It Follows as, like, throwbacky.
Yeah, they're throwbacky, but they're throwback with a twist.
Yeah.
And even, like, It Follows will embrace and defy the tropes that I mentioned with the summer sex horror movies.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because that is, you know, the driving force of It Follows. But the fact that it's the driving force means that they're addressing it in a very different way. And they're a lot more abstract horror movies. It's not just, oh man, Jason's going to get you. It's the Babadook is a metaphor for grief, or the thing that follows and It Follows is a metaphor for for life after you lose your virginity.
Yeah.
You know, stuff like that.
You know, deep shit and stuff.
Yeah, deep shit. It's using horror to address things that are under the... it's using horror as subtext to address stuff, and I love it when stuff does that. And the fact that that's gaining traction and popularity right now, I'm tying that back into what I said earlier with where the summer blockbuster is. I think that that's... At a point, the problem that horror had was all the popular franchises were no longer making money, and when they didn't have the franchises, they didn't have anything. I think that as we go from less and less original movies and more to franchises and next chapters, at a point that's going to be all that we have that's coming out. And at that point, those are going to start losing money. And I'm not saying, you know, next year or the year after. I'm talking decades from now. When people no longer feel like going to see the next Star Wars movie that comes out once a year.
Yeah.
We're going to get to a point where it's like, where Hollywood's going to get desperate, and then suddenly you're going to get a new form of summer blockbuster that might be a return to form from decades prior, and then suddenly people are going to be hailing as a renaissance. And I'm not saying that I'm not even saying that the movies are coming out now are bad. We like more what we see than what we don't.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying, oh, it's objectively wrong that we're doing this. It's just, that's how it is now. It's franchise season.
Well, and I think you could say that this summer, more than any previous summer in recent memory, was that, because you had needless sequel after needless sequel, you know, where you had...
And so many of them bombed.
And a lot of them bombed, because, I mean, well, I think it's a matter of oversaturation and stuff that people didn't want to see to begin with. You know, like, no one wanted to see a sequel to Tim Burton's Alice in Wonderland. You know, I'm not entirely sure why X-Men, Apocalypse, I don't know exactly why that failed. I don't know if people are just kind of tired of, you know, X-Men movies or whatever, or they're just burnt out on those.
They might just be burnt out on superhero stuff.
Well, but I think it's also, unless it
or has... Or, like, they have a certain quota of superhero they can take in a year, and... X-Men was probably the third or fourth on that list.
One, I think it's not just superhero movies, because obviously Marvel still makes a bunch of money and people are excited for those. So yeah. I think there's like a brand to it too, where it's like the X-Men movies are Sony, they're not Marvel. You know, even though they're Marvel characters from the Marvel comics, they're not Marvel Studios. So that could be a part of it too. But it's like, but then you have something like Independence Day 2. Where it's like, no one asked for this, and it flopped, you know? And I'm trying to think of what other ones there were. Because it felt like, you know, between, you know, you have Civil War, and then you have Suicide Squad, which is, that's even still debatable. Like, it was a hit, but it wasn't like an enormous hit, right?
It turned a profit, which is what they needed after sinking so much money into Batman v Superman.
That's true, but it's then a question of, was it enough profit? You know, obviously it turned a profit, but it's like, you know, that movie had a lot of, you know, extra fees tacked on later on because of reshoots and such, and I think it wasn't as big of a success as they wanted, but...
The DC movie franchise right now is not in a good way.
No, it's not. And we'll see.
Critically, it's hated. Financially, it's struggling. And with hardcore fans, it's really not working, so they always get bad word of mouth.
Yep. Well, the thing, too, it's like, it's almost like WB has, like, this whole thing. It's like, it's too big to fail kind of thing, where it's like,
They hit a problem where they were using the projected profits of Batman v Superman as what they would be budgeting into future movies. And when that happened, and when Batman vs. Superman underperformed, they had to cut the number of movies they were making, which means there were less jobs.
Yep.
It's, like, Steven Spielberg a few years ago talked about the fall of the summer blockbuster. I think that we saw the first Pillar fall this year.
Which is funny, because that wasn't even a summer blockbuster, technically.
Well, it's, like, between that and stuff, like, you know, Spielberg's The BFG wasn't even, like, top five.
And wasn't well-marketed because it was so oversaturated, you know?
Yeah, we're increasing the number of big movies that have to turn a profit for a studio. You know, tentpole movies. We're getting more and more tentpoles to the point where you go, you know, you don't need that many tentpoles. Like, three will do, guys.
Yeah.
A tent can stand with three.
No, it needs, like, 10.
Yeah, so we're getting more and more to tentpole films, but the fact is, the average audience goer, you know, I think it's Lindsay Ellis calls them, like, Mona and Cletus out in Indiana.
Yeah.
they'll only go see five movies a year. And there's nothing wrong with that. You're getting better entertainment on TV these days anyway.
Yeah.
But when you only go see five movies a year, and a studio needs everybody to go see seven, guess what? You're at least looking at two movies a flop.
Mm-hmm.
And that's happening across the board, and I think that's just going to consolidate into deep franchises that make ass tons of money, like, you know, Pixar,
Star Wars,
Marvel, or Star Wars. Notice everything I mentioned was Disney.
Yep.
They'll be the only survivors of the great blockbuster wars.
The damn mouse will stand upon the corpses of his rivals.
Yeah, but I think that when that happens, when those pillars fall, you're gonna start seeing smaller stuff. Like, it, you know, 40 years ago when a studio released The Sting, thinking, you know, I think audience will like this, and, you know, makes hundreds of million dollars. It's gonna be a great hit. The sun will shine again on cinema. But in between then and now, we have some great TV. Like...
I don't know. Tell me some TV that you like.
Westworld.
Oh, yeah! That's a thing. I didn't know you were going to do that abrupt of a segue. I thought you were going to finish your thing on horror comedies, but okay, fine. We'll just fucking talk about Westworld.
Horror comedies are good. we mentioned all the ones I wanted to mention, besides, I don't know, Evil Dead.
Well, we mentioned Thanksgiving. That's all we wanted to do. It's the only thing we wanted to do.
Everything that we mentioned, with the exception of the Freeburg and Seltzer movies, is worth seeking out.
At least giving it a shot. Even, yeah, the scary movies.
You deserve to see where spoof movies got their reputation before they got their bad reputation.
Yeah. Joan Jett reputations.
Like, you know they're trying to do Spaceballs 2, right?
Yes. I remember they made an animated series too, and it was awful.
Yeah, but I kind of want Mel Brooks to do it if he makes a parody of, you know, franchise movies.
If it's a parody of, like, The Force Awakens.
Well, not just, like The Force Awakens combined with any given franchise. Like, a hyper-insane version of 22 Jump Street.
Oh, my God. Okay. I feel ya.
You're like, you know, Spaceballs here to search for more money. That's not all. We have the Spaceballs Expanded Universe.
The cinematic universe of Spaceballs.
It crosses over with Young Frankenstein. It crosses over with Blazing Saddles. It crosses over with Dead and Loving It. No one watched Dead and Loving It. We're still crossing over.
Even Silent Movie.
I'm always saying, you want your 12 Chairs sequel? We got your 12 Chairs sequel. You don't want it? Well, we sunk $20 million into it, so you get in anyway.
Hey, maybe even to be or not to be. Mel Brooks didn't direct it, but hey, he was in it.
Hey, that movie's amazing.
That movie is amazing.
It makes you miss Anne Bancroft.
Speaking of Anne Bancroft, Westworld.
Was she in the 70s version? Was she in the 70s
version? I don't think so.
Maybe. Who knows?
Hey, if you want a better segue, Spielberg, Jurassic Park, Michael Crichton, Westworld. Done.
Michael Crichton amusement parks. Like ER Park.
ER Park, the Strain Park. Andromeda Strain.
Andromeda Park. Just a park about a bunch of stuff you find on Andromeda.
Yeah, the Sphere Park.
It's mostly empty space.
Yeah, because before we recorded, we were joking, like, because Casey, I accidentally spoiled what the premise of Westworld was for Casey, because he didn't know anything about Westworld.
And didn't want to know anything about Westworld.
Well, too fucking bad. And like, you know, we were joking, like, okay, so clearly he had a thing for writing about theme parks that went awry. That's what happens in the original movie. Is Yul Brynner.
And it doesn't necessarily seem like they're going that way with this one.
Well, that's what's interesting about the new Westworld, which is what we're talking about now. If that wasn't clear to our listeners. It's the new HBO series, Westworld. Created by Jonathan Nolan and his wife, who I unfortunately do not remember her name. I think her first name's Lisa.
Yeah, it's Lisa something or other.
And Lisa Nolan. I think that's awesome that this, like, married couple is making this awesome HBO series.
It's like True Detective.
Yeah, Nick Pizzolatto and Matthew McConaughey, the best marriage.
Wait, wasn't True Detective made by a married couple?
No, it was just Nick Pizzolatto.
Shit. I thought it was, like, the writer and the director were husband and wife, and it was the same.
Not of the first season.
Fuck a duck.
Fuck a duck.
Am I thinking of how Aaron Sorkin fired his entire writing staff on The Newsroom except for his ex-wife?
Probably.
Fuck The Newsroom.
Speaking of another HBO series that isn't as good as Westworld, even after one episode.
Westworld, it's weird because it's... I'm not going to call it heady sci-fi, but it's sci-fi that tries to talk about something that's high concept.
Yeah, there's like, you know, ponderings of humanity and our nature.
It's hitting the same receptors in my brain that The Leftovers hit, where it's using a genre subject to talk about something with human nature.
Yeah.
I would argue it's more accessible than The Leftovers.
Yes, it is very much more accessible.
And I say this as somebody who absolutely loves The Leftovers. It's not as up its own ass as The Leftovers.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Leftovers is very proud of how arty it is, and I still love it. It speaks to me. I cannot fault anybody who does not care for it.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see that.
Now, if you don't care for Westworld, get out.
Get the fuck out. No.
Leave the home you're in right now and sleep under a bridge tonight.
Whoa, Casey. The opinions of Casey Gerard do not reflect those of Geeks at Large.
Yet.
Yes. Whoa.
And I'm mayor.
Hostile takeover. Casey for Casey, Wyoming, 2016.
That town is my birthright.
It is my birth. This is like Game of Thrones shit.
The King of the North.
King of the Northwest.
I shall rename the title mayor to Kaser.
The Kaser. Oh God, no.
The Kaser of the North.
So anyway, Westworld. For those who don't know, basically the basic premise of Westworld, which is a readaptation of Michael Crichton's novel Westworld, and a remake, I guess you could call it, a reimagining of the 1973 cult sci-fi film Westworld, which is about this futuristic theme park where people, like, rich people can go and live out fantasies of being a Wild West outlaw or a sheriff and just kind of role play as, you know, like, citizens of the Wild West. And in the original, like, story and the movie, I believe, androids that populate the park, which are called hosts, start to go awry and start, you know, attacking the citizens. That's the movie. And while it seems like they're going something like that route in the show, you know, it's like you said, Casey, it's not entirely clear if it's just going to be a beat for beat retelling or if it's, cause you know, it does feel like it's trying to get something deeper, you know, in there's some, you know, solid character, like, beginnings. It's a very intriguing pilot, you know, because
it does what a pilot's supposed to do, where it conveys the ideas of the show, even if it doesn't do much of the plot of the show.
Yeah, and
like it introduces the characters, like, in very memorable ways. Like, you can go, oh, I remember the security chief. I remember the Black Felix lighter who gets it.
Jeffrey Wright.
Jeffrey Wright, who programmed. That's who's always going to be to me. My first exposure to him was, why is Felix Leiter black?
Wow, Casey.
No, it turns out he's one of the better ones.
Well, yeah. I mean, let's be fair. Felix Leiter has had highs and lows.
Remember when Jack's dad from Lost was Felix Leiter?
Oh, yes.
It wasn't terrible. He just had no chemistry with Timothy Dalton. I think in few people have chemistry with Timothy Dalton. It's hard to have chemistry with Timothy Dalton.
Especially when he's running next to you and he's like, I'm a slasher. Lock me up.
A slasher of prices.
Slasher of prices. That's still one of my favorite intros ever. Timothy Dalton. Yeah, yeah. You gotta admit, at least Timothy Dalton is like kind of a joy in that movie.
He's fun.
Hey, man.
Hot Fuzz doesn't work for me, man. I'm sorry.
You praise something in Hot Fuzz. I'll take it.
Yeah, I like the music.
You better like the music. That movie, that soundtrack was, like, basically made for you.
Yeah, you're not wrong. I like the music. I still have the soundtrack on my iPod. I think it's a well-constructed movie.
It's like, you know what's also well-constructed?
The Westworld pilot.
Well, I was going to say, you know, girls, but, you know, whatever.
Oh, I thought you were going to say the Taj Mahal.
Yeah, you know, the Sistine Chapel is actually pretty well constructed.
You know what was really well constructed? The Titanic.
God damn it. No, hear me out, man.
Hear me out. Five compartments flooded. Any ship would have gone down.
Fucking A.
The fact that it stayed afloat as long as it did gave more people a chance to survive.
All I'm just saying is that fucking iceberg had no business being there. It should have called a taxi, had gone home, it should have known it was drunk.
Should have gotten an Uber.
Should have gotten an Uber, man. But you know what? Live and learn.
You know, Ubers are cheap these days. Imagine how cheap they were in 1912.
God.
Probably like a penny to go home.
Westworld.
Westworld. This might be one of our more tangenty episodes.
And that's saying something. Jesus, Casey, we bring you back and suddenly it's like...
hey. I'm always saying we haven't brought up my idea for a theme park. Grassy Knoll. Dealey Plaza World.
Oh my god.
You get to interact with all the robots of people who were there when Kennedy was shot.
Oliver Stone would, like, fucking fund this Kickstarter. No, no doubt. Oh yeah, Snowden was a thing. Remember when that was a thing? Snowden. Anyway.
Made $800 trillion worldwide, but the media doesn't want you to know about it.
Thanks, Obama.
But Westworld's good. I like Westworld.
And it's like, I don't know how much we want to talk about Westworld because it's a new show. It's been out for like...
It's an ideas pilot, that's the thing. You can, really, what we can talk about is the premise and what it sets up with, where it, how it talks about what constitutes a consciousness.
When I like the aspects, like, it feels like it's also like a work drama, where you get the behind-the-scenes people that work at the park.
Yeah, which granted, I feel like their stuff gets a little cliche.
A little bit.
Like the forced... I felt like the conflict was a little bit forced between how everybody treated Jeffrey Wright. It's like, oh, you're just one of the programmers. Oh, just stay out of here. It's gonna smell bad.
Fuck you, nerd.
Yeah, like that felt a little cliche to me. It did not quite work. But there was also plenty of stuff that did work. I really loved I really loved Evan Rachel Wood. Or was it Evan Wood?
It's Evan Rachel Wood, I think. She's fantastic.
Across the Universe chick.
Yeah.
Is.
And finally, it's something good.
Yeah, she's deserved this for a while.
Yeah.
And she does a really good job as Dolores, one of the hosts.
Yeah.
Who they're implying might be developing a consciousness through a bug.
Yeah.
Put in there by Anthony Hopkins, which that was another pleasant surprise. Anthony Hopkins in the show.
And he's not sleepwalking. Like, that's what's cool, is that it's not, like, some of his things. Like, because when you look at Anthony Hopkins, like, he's been in, like, you know, the Thor movies, where it's like he doesn't get
Anthony
to do
Hopkins has coasted since 1991.
I don't know about that, but...
Well, since Silence of the Lambs, what is something that he has really, really put his A-game into?
Probably the Titus movie.
Yeah. Yeah, so tiny stuff. And this one is apparently appealing to his art house sense.
Yeah, I mean, he's been in... There's been a handful, like, I'd even give it to him with fucking Hannibal in 2000 or 2001 or whatever.
He's giving his all, just kind of schlocky.
It's very schlocky, but I'll say that he cared, you know what I mean? But, like, I feel like they're just like, ah, it's Anthony Hopkins, he did Shakespeare and shit, ah, here you go. It's, you know, you play Odin or whatever, and it's like, you know, or he's been in... weird, like, you know, kind of low-budget thriller kind of Taken-esque movies. Like, there was one that he did recently that has, like, Colin Farrell in it, and it's fucking weird. Like a kind of crime movie or something. So, but it's cool to see...
Minority Report.
Yes, exactly.
I was about to say, why hasn't there been a Minority Report show yet? And then I realized, shit, there was a Minority Report show.
Why hasn't there been a Lethal Weapon show? Oh, wait!
I would totally go for an AI show.
Yeah?
Yeah, like, set in the AI world. That's a really neat world that they did a mediocre movie with.
They did a not super great job showing.
I think they did a great job showing. I just think that the least interesting aspect was the part they showed.
Yeah.
Like, actually, that's mean to me. I like AI. I'm the guy.
You're that guy.
It's a good show. It's a good movie.
Show. It's a good
like
show.
Like Westworld.
Like Westworld. But yeah, and but yeah, with Anthony Hopkins, it's like, you know, he's kind of doing his normal kind of character. He's like the weird, wise character that you don't completely trust. But I think he's subtle enough, and he seems to care enough that it's like, oh, I miss this Anthony Hopkins, you know. And there's a nice, like, kind of. Would you say that there's like a sinister quality to him?
I mean, I won't say he's sinister, but there's underlying secrets.
Yeah. Okay.
That's a big thing with the first episode is underlying secrets.
Yeah.
Like, what is going on with Evan Rachel Wood's robot? Why are there Why are some of them bugging out?
Right.
And, like, it's something that they hint at where Jeffrey Wright brings up that they're retaining tiny little subconscious memories of the last time they went through a playthrough.
Yeah, because they're scripts. And
yeah, they're retaining something that they remember from the last cycle that they went through, which is... which just starts bringing up, like, does that count as what a subconscious is?
Yeah.
Does that mean that they have a conscience? And does that mean that they are a actual thing? Like, it starts debating about what AI is, and I'm a sucker for stuff like that.
Right, exactly. Yeah, it's a cool little show, and it's nice to have, you know,
it carried a lot of great ideas in the pilot, and I'm hoping that it brings up the momentum. I'm hoping it doesn't turn out to be a really interesting pilot they didn't know where to go with.
Right. Yeah, hopefully, you know, hopefully, fingers crossed. I did look at
and I trust Jonathan Nolan on that, because the things I'm bringing up right now, those are things that interest him. Like, what was the thing you did for CBS? Was it Person of Interest?
Person of Interest, yeah.
And people told me that as Person of Interest started, it was just, okay, here's a procedural crime drama. It's a gimmick of the facial recognition software. And apparently as it went along, it kind of went full-on sci-fi.
That's what I heard, like, too. And I'm like, what?
Like, they knew that they wanted, from the beginning, they wanted to tell a sci-fi show, but they knew that CBS wouldn't let them unless they gradually came into it.
Right.
Which I've wanted somebody to do for years. Like, I have a half a pilot written that's something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe it's cool. Like, it's always cool when they do genre TV well, you know.
Yeah, or subtle genre TV that becomes explicitly genre. Like, that's... I know people hate that about Lost. I love that about Lost.
Right. And it's I feel like while Westworld's more overtly genre, like, it's accessible enough and intriguing enough, you know.
And it plays orchestral Rolling Stone songs.
Oh my god.
that's our thing that we need to talk about with this, the music cues.
Well, yeah, because you bring up that, but even before that, there's a player piano rendition of Black Hole Sun by Soundgarden.
So, and light grunge by way of player piano.
It's not even light grunge, it's just straight grunge on player piano. And it's like, and what I liked about it is that it's not, like, obvious, you know, like, when I was watching the episode and, like, I, like, was just listening to the piano, I'm like, oh, this is kind of cool. And I heard, like, I recognized, like, you know, dun 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 dun, you know, that's Black Hole Sun. And then, like, you know, you're listening to the song and, like, it's, there's a scene where they have Paint It Black. It's an orchestral cover of Paint It Black, and it's awesome.
Yeah, it sounds like something out of the Magnificent Seven.
Yes, exactly. That's why, like, I kind of trust the people making the show when you take a really, you know, a classic rock song and you appropriate it to kind of a classic Western reference.
Yeah, and it's... Yeah. And it really... We were talking about the subtleness of using a Soundgarden song. This one is, like... It starts off with, like, wait a minute, am I hearing the riff I think I'm hearing?
Exactly. That's how both these songs were for me. I'm like, wait a minute. You know? It's like, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And it's like, wait. hold the fuck up, Westworld. Are you fucking doing what I think you're doing, Westworld?
Well played, Westworld.
Well played, sir, or madam. You know. I'm not going to gender Westworld. You be what you want to be.
I can't wait till they play all of Pink Floyd, Dark Side of the Moon.
On a harmonica. On a fiddle. On a fiddle. On a washboard. Is this going to be like a washboard, a jug, and like the
Tim
bass?
Tim Kaine is going to cameo with a harmonica.
Yeah, and then like... And then there's going to be, like, a bass, but it's just going to be, like, the stick with the string attached to a wash bucket. Money! like Money Plays. Or, like, On the Run.
The Great Gig in the Sky.
Well, because we were talking, like, I hope that's a thing in this show.
And the fact that they did it more than once implies that's going to be a thing.
And, like, you were talking
unless
about Led Zeppelin.
Unless they watch the pile and go, you know, I really like it, except for that, so we're going to cut it.
Yeah. And I think that's a lot of people's, like, favorite thing. Like, that's what they remember. Like, even though that's not a knock on the episode, because the episode's really solid. But it's, like, that sticks out, because it's, like, that's just a really cool scene. Like, it's like a scene that just, like, all as a whole just, like, works. you know. And there's even humor in the show. Like, I like that there's like a little tinge of humor here and there.
Well, I like that they were the guy was getting ready to give a big speech, and then one of the guests was just like, and it just shoots him in the neck. I shot him.
That's what I'm talking about. Like, that's such a great little humorous lie, like a little bit. Like, you have this buildup, fucking Paint It Black is playing, and he's like, God, he's like all dressed in black, and he's all badass, and like, then he just gets like shot.
Yeah, Paolo from Lost.
Yeah, Paolo from Lost. And he just gets taken out.
I love it if Nikki shows up. Oh, God, why didn't they get Nikki to play the woman in there?
it's just too real. This is too much Lost references. Too many. Too many.
Hey, J.J. Abrams did work on this.
Yeah. You know.
You revived another 70s property, and this one
turned a lot heavier. Remember Westworld? Hey, Casey, remember Westworld?
Have you been watching this season of South Park?
On and off, but I haven't stayed up with it completely.
But you saw Member Berries?
Yes, I saw Member Berries.
Good. Member Berries is amazing.
Remember Westworld?
Yeah, that's what it is. It's like somebody going, well, remember Westworld? And turns out Westworld is a viable property.
Yeah, because, well, I think it's been long enough, and they've been wanting to make one forever. Like, I think I read reports, like, even in, like, the 20th anniversary, because it was 73 that the original came out, because Yul Brynner was still alive. And, because that's kind of the, like, one of the kind of kitschy charms of Westworld is that, you know, it's basically Yul Brynner as like a robot version of his character from The Magnificent Seven. Yeah.
Like, I've never seen it. Like I said, I knew nothing about Westworld before you spoiled it for me.
Yep. Because I'm a dick. I ruined it for Casey.
Yeah, I know that I'm saying all these great things about it. It really sucks because Taylor ruined the premise. Yeah, it is a really interesting idea for a show. And I'm hoping that they push with the momentum they have. And I think that it seems like they're going to go. Because it wasn't just, oh, here's the idea. There's Ed Harris pushing through with it. They're setting stuff up with Evan Rachel Wood. They're setting stuff up with Jeffrey Wright. I really want to see where this goes.
Yeah.
And maybe it'll turn out good. Or maybe it'll suck.
Or maybe it'll disappoint us.
Maybe everything's pointless.
Everything's pointless. That's the end.
We all die alone.
That's the message we want to end Geeks at Large with. Is everything's pointless.
And you all die alone. Except robots. They'll come back and be friends forever.
But you know what's not pointless? Audio commentaries.
Yeah. Check ours out.
Yeah, check ours out. They'll be in the description below. We've got... I know.
Sure to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter.
Yes, like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Yes, look us up, Geeks at Large. At both. And I kept promoting, like, I have a handful of commentaries that I've had on the shelf for a bit that I have to get to and kind of fiddle with, you know, because there were some technical problems and stuff with recording and all that stuff. But I hope to have those out soon. Me and Casey would like to do at least one Halloween one. Mm-hmm. And have that out by the end of the month. So, and is there anything else you want to promote, Casey?
Nothing right now. I'm in New York, and maybe some things will go my way, and maybe I'll have something to promote real soon.
And people can follow you on Twitter at
#TheCaser. Yes. Without a Y. I'm not sure who keeps putting Ys in Caser, but they're wrong.
Caser X.
I coined the title. I'm allowed to choose how it's spelled.
You made up your own nickname.
I made it up on mic.
Yep.
You know, like, you can go back. Well, I don't think you can go back anymore.
Yeah, probably not.
Unless you use the Wayback Machine on Lounge Geeks. But no, you asked me to come up with something as I was sitting right there. I was like, I don't know, the Caser.
And awful, awful history was made.
Caser.
Caser. And you can follow me on Twitter at tcarlisleart4. I believe that's what it is. I don't even know my own fucking Twitter hashtag.
Get it together, girl.
I'm just a fucking mess.
And, or you can see Taylor and I talk about online dating.
Yes! Hey, what'd you think of my pickup line? I wouldn't mind sharing a door with you.
Without any context, that just sounds weird.
Well, I'm just saying. Because you were talking about fucking Titanic, because it's you, and you always talk about the Titanic. Like, on this episode.
Will you be the shooter on my grassy knoll? Listeners, leave a comment for me. Help me out here. How many times am I allowed to mention the Kennedy assassination in my OKCupid profile?
Is it above or below 7?
Look, I'm at 19. I think I can bring it down to 16. But any more than that, and I would kind of mess with the entire structure of the bio.
Also, one more thing I want to promote. Is that okay. I've mentioned it probably several times on previous episodes, so much so that people might be sick of hearing about it. But you may have heard about my original comic, Skeleton Bay Detective Agency, that I made.
Yeah, I heard of it. It's pretty good. I read it, and I'd read more.
Well, we had a Kickstarter for it, and that Kickstarter was successful, and we'd like to make more, and we are planning on continuing with Skeleton Bay as a webcomic for the foreseeable future. So, in the description below, I'll have the link to it. It is skeletonbay.com. You can check out the Kickstarter book. We posted all the black and white, non-colored, pages that I did, because we're saving the beautiful colored pages by my friend Brittany Peer for physical copies. But on Halloween, we're planning on posting the next issue's first page and continuing from there. Probably weekly at first, and then we'll see what happens. We're also talking about, me and Cameron, the co-creator, the writer, are talking about maybe starting a Patreon, so I'll probably promote the shit out of that too. But yes, so if you've listened this far into the podcast and you're looking for a webcomic to check out, maybe check out skeletonbaycomic.com. The comic's also on Twitter at TSBDA, which is an acronym for the Skeleton Bay Detective Agency. So I'll link that too. But yes, so does that do it for us, Casey?
I think that does it for me. See you in another 6 months.
And until then, we shall remain at large.
Cool.